I mean, look, Alex Van Halen is another notable drummer that just recently sold off his entire warehouse drum kits from back in the day. Everybody's doing this.
What are you going to do with it?
The stars live here.
Are you ready?
On air. Online.
Are you ready to have a good time?
On your smart speaker and wherever you stream. Broadcasting from Montreal and around the world.
The Jeremy White Show, available wherever you stream.
Catch up on past interviews and episodes on demand now.
Subscribe so you don't miss any of it.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to the Jeremy White Show. Make sure you like and subscribe to get more cool stuff like this. New episodes are going to be coming out weekly for the rest of the summer, if I can get guests. Guests have been a little dry lately, but we're working on it. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to Carmine Appice. Of course, legendary drummer from Cactus, Vanilla Fudge, Rod Stewart. They got a brand new record out called Temple of Blues. There was a couple of technical glitches at the beginning, but if you get power through that, we got a great chat. Talk to him about specifically one question I wanted to know from him. Alex Van Halen recently cleared out his entire warehouse and sold off everything you could imagine from this thing. And I asked him, you know, why do you think he did that? You know, is there no sentimental value? And his answer was pretty straightforward, and I kind of have to agree with him. That's all on the way. Stick around. It's next here on The Jeremy White Show.
I'm back.
Hey, there we go.
Yeah, did you hear any of that?
No, I caught it the first couple of words, and you went black.
Unbelievable. Well, anyway, this guy had a, you know, the saw player who had the hair over here, nothing up here. And I told him, look, wear a cool Robert De Niro hat and get some color.
Yeah.
You know? So he did that. And the next show we did, one of the agents that booked it came over to us and said, who's the new guitar player? I said, no, it's the same guy. It goes to show you, if you look good, you sound better.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to look the part, right? I mean, everybody, exactly. You can just wear black, but I mean, if you stand out from the pack.
I'm lucky I still got hair left.
Luckily, yeah, I just got my hair plugged, so we got that going on this side.
Oh, you mean plug? Oh, you mean to grow?
No, I actually went for a hair transplant a couple of months ago back in September.
Did it work?
Oh, yeah. It's this new technology they do. So what they do is they take the hair follicles from the back and then they transplant them on the top. They did like over like 3,000 hair follicles on me, and it's thick, man. Wow. It is thick. So
well, I got a little spot going here. Maybe I should put it in.
I'll connect you with my doctor. Come up to Montreal. She's fantastic.
Wow.
And you'll probably save some money coming up here with the exchange rate, too.
Well, it's a little, I live in Florida. It's a little far.
Ah, come on. It's like a 3-hour flight. It's
nothing. Where do you live?
I'm on a native reservation just outside of Montreal. So,
you're up there. It's okay. I'm sure we can do it in America somewhere.
Yeah, probably maybe cheaper. But you know what? You get what you pay for. Make sure you get a good doctor.
I'm okay for now. I got to wait maybe a couple of few years.
Yeah, you're good. Yeah, come on. It could be worse. You could have David Lee Roth here.
That's right.
Dude's going bald.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about this record. Here we are in 2024. Cactus put out a brand new album. I mean, did you think that here we are decades later, you'd still be getting you'd be still putting music out?
No, actually, I actually didn't think any of these things. You know, we put out a box set from BBA. You know, Fudge has done albums lately. My guitar's record.
Yeah.
I did it in the 90s. They just did a 25th anniversary box set. You know, so, you know, I'm having a good time. Yeah.
Yeah, which is good. I mean,
You know, this wasn't my idea. This was the owner of the label, Brian Pereira, mm-hmm. who owns Cleopatra. It was his idea to do this. And
yeah.
So I said to him, look, it's your idea, so you better get your whole label behind it. Because if it don't happen, it's your fault.
And if it's a flop, it's his fault too.
Yeah, can we put a hold for 1 minute?
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, so the label owner came up with the idea to do this. He said, do you think you can do this? And I said, come on, dude, I did guitars. I got all the greatest guitar players on. I think I can do this. I said, Cactus has a lot of friends that you know they influenced. I knew it was Van Halen, AC/DC, King's X, just to name a few, but there's more than that, you know? So I said, let's give it a try. So he gave me a little budget. Like I said, small budget. That's what you do today.
Yeah.
And we did it. And, you know, I started it all in my studio. I live in Florida. I have a studio in my house. It's just really a drum studio to record drums. I can record keyboard. But I never recorded any basses or guitars. I did vocals there.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, Mike Stein's vocals on Long Tall Sally was done in my studio. And so And I started with the drums, you know, nobody else. It was just me.
So, I mean, you've pretty much recorded in every great studio over the last few decades. I mean, like, what have you learned when it came to, you know, designing your drum room and recording in there? Was it, you know, technologically difficult?
I did not design anything. I put a rug down. I put those curtains on the window. And I just put mics in the room. And, you know, the drums sound great. So they're going to sound great wherever you put them.
Right.
I got the room mics in the kitchen part of where it's a one bedroom guest house. So my drums were in what was the living room. And then there was a double doorway. And I put the mics in front of each double doorway on the side, because when I recorded live in big studio, I used to, you know, so the walls acted as a baffle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the drum sound I'm getting in there is great. I learned how to mic techniques from Andy Johns, who's one of the greats.
Yeah.
And it's great. I see there's a unstable video.
Yeah, you just dropped out again. It might be your Wi-Fi
connection. I don't know why, but we're both starting to move. Hello?
Yeah, are you there?
Yeah, this is not good. That's the bad thing about these Zoom videos. Yeah, I'm here, but it's bad.
Let's just blame AT&T. We'll blame them on everything. You
know, I'm here now. Yeah, okay, good. It keeps going in and out. I don't know why.
That's okay. Well, real quick, I mean, like, talk about Andy Johns. And I mean, like, you know, just recording drums in general. Over the years, I just find that it's become a lost art in a sense. You listen to rock radio, everybody's drums sound the same. It's the same sample replacements in the mix. Nobody's recording real original sounding drum sounds anymore. Do you think that's kind of gone?
No. Just like the band sounds, every band sounds the same. Every pop song sounds the same. Every band in rock, they get that fast double bass drums and they either sing and they go, you know, and that's rock today, you know. But, you know, the old days, you'd be able to, you know, that's Led Zeppelin, that's Deep Purple, that's Vanilla Fudge, that's Cactus, that's Van Halen. But that doesn't happen anymore. I don't even think there's any rock radio, do you?
Well, there is rock radio. You got to find it. And just going on the streaming services, you listen to a lot of the bands. There are some really good bands that sound original. I mean, you listen to guys like Dirty Honey or The Struts. I mean, they got it going. But everybody else, I mean, they're just sort of recycling that classic rock sound from the 70s. You're not really hearing anything innovative anymore. You don't have the Mutt Langs and Bob Rocks kind of helping to paint the canvas. I mean,
look, everything's been done in rock, really. You know, rock has become, you know, like jazz became jazz and became the thing, and it faded away. And rock became rock and it faded away. I mean, things like the Hard Rock Cafes, you know, and the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. It's almost played out, the name. They have a big guitar. Nobody wants to play guitar anymore. The kids growing up, they don't want to play guitar. That's why Sam Ash is going out of business and guitar centers are shrinking. Is nobody goes in to buy drums and basses and guitars no more. They go in to buy a couple of mics, maybe a keyboard or a DJ setup, you know?
Yeah. How do you think we change that? How do you think we bring musicians back and get kids interested in playing again?
Well, like you said, they're playing again, but they all sound the same.
Well, yeah, that's true.
They're all playing, but, you know, my friend's kids up the block, they say, hey, did you ever hear a so-and-so? I mean, I actually heard a Dirty Honey, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I've seen some of their music and heard it. Have you ever heard of this one or that one? All these ridiculous names. But, you know, I sound like my father when Vanilla Fudge came out. You know, what a ridiculous name, you know? But, you know, I get it. I get they're doing it. My friend's band, his son's band, they did something. They got a guy that's going, singing. I said, what's he singing about? I don't understand. He goes, I don't know. That's the drummer of the band. He didn't know what he's singing about.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I did see some great bands. I saw Papa Roach. They kicked my ass. They were great.
Yeah, fantastic.
You know? They were a great band.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan. With Shinedown. I liked them better than Shinedown, actually.
Shinedown, good friends of the show.
And I went out and bought some stuff of theirs. I don't stream. I buy. That's why I tell everybody for this record, don't buy. I mean, don't stream. Buy. Streaming kills the business. It killed the business.
Yeah. Hey, talk a little bit about that. I mean, like with your back catalog over the years, I mean, have you seen your residuals just get thinner and thinner since streaming kicked in?
It's ridiculous. You get a thing like this big of streams, you get $50, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a joke. So I tell the label, don't give me that. Just give me the first five pages. of a royalty, because we still sell records and all the bands I'm with, the old bands.
Yeah.
You know, new ones, King Cobra, you know, doesn't sell any of that, but BBA and Vanilla Fudge Cactus still sells product, what you call product.
Yeah. Like you're moving physical CDs.
There's other
CDs.
Ways to get money these days. You got Sound Exchange, you got PPL in England, and they pay different kind of royalties, but it kind of makes up for the flaws. But you know, you got to get the stream 0.003 cents. That's what the artists get.
Yeah.
And they got split it four ways. It's ridiculous. You
well,
know?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, you look at this new record, Temple of Blues, and you got some amazing guests on this record. I mean, everybody from, you know, Billy Sheehan, Bumblefoot, Dee Snider, Joe Bonamassa is on them. Every single one of these, I mean, it must have cost an arm and a leg to get all these guys to play on a record. Do you have to pay every single one of them, or is it like favors
on
these guys?
Yeah, you pay. But when you do a record like this, you get a favorite nation's fee. Everybody gets the same.
Right.
You know, you can't afford to do it. I mean, when I did my album in Gotazus, I got a huge budget.
Yeah.
You know, because it sold. I ended up selling. Yeah, 200,000 or 300,000 around the world, you know, of records, you know. So they gave me a big deal. But now, you know, you don't get that kind of money. So you have to pay everybody the same, no matter how big or small they are, you know. A guy that's in the band like Zebra, he got the same as Joe Bonamassa. Yeah, but Joe didn't even get it. He said, give it to my charity, you know. Some people didn't want to get paid, which is awesome.
Yeah.
No, it varies, but you can't do it unless you do something like that, because you got to pay everybody. You got to pay an engineer to mix it, an engineer to keep it all together, you know, and different guys. You know, sometimes you had to pay a studio they had to go into, you know, but I've been lucky. There's only been one or two of those. And it's been great. I mean, like, look, I was just glad that all these people were influenced by Cactus or friends. Now, even the friends of mine that I called, like Bill, Steve Stevens was a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I called him to do this. And he said, oh, are you kidding me? I'm from Brooklyn. Cactus, I'm a fan of Cactus. So I had a bunch of people who I just thought were friends ended up being fans of Cactus, and they did it, you know. But certain things that what, you know, I did, like the beginning of the song called Swim. Swim was actually, the beginning of Swim was taken and expanded, and it was called Eruption on Van Halen's first album.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I said, well, I'm going to make it a little more expanded and get a great guitar player to play it. So people go, wow, that sounds like Eruption, you know, and we did. And I got Doug Aldridge to play, and he's a monster.
Yeah.
And I told him the idea, and he goes, OK, I can do that. And he did a phenomenal job, you know, and ended up he was a Cactus fan. I didn't realize that. I know Doug since 1992, you know, and he's a Cactus fan. I didn't know that. Marco Mendoza, the same thing. And I knew it because he did the stupid thing that Tim did at the beginning of that song. And I said, were you a Cactus fan? He goes, yeah, because I was a Tim Bogert fan too. Billy Sheehan was a monster Tim Bogert fan, giant Cactus fan. And King's X, when I went on that bus, when we played with them on the Billy Squire Blue Murder tour with King's X, I went on that bus and they were playing Cactus. And that's how I knew they were fans. So, you know, it's great, you know, but you know, those days back then, we were pioneering everything, you know. And that's when Led Zeppelin, when we came out, they called us the American Led Zeppelin. Zeppelin was only out for a year at that point. They weren't huge yet, you mm-hmm. know. And they were, you know, like getting ready to be huge. That second album was ready to kick butt, you know. But we were called the American Led Zeppelin because we were a four-piece band with the same kind of trip, blues rock, you know.
Yeah.
That's why now we're marketing this band as a blues record, this album, because it's blues rock. Foghat, Robin Trower, they're on the number one spot in blues and Billboard. It's the same stuff we do. So I told them, that's why we changed the name from Cactus Influences and Friends to Cactus Temple of Blues Influences and Friends. And now we're being marketed and it's doing great in that spot. We had went up to number three on the Amazon blues chart. And we went to, on their regular chart, I think number 20 or less, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. And
which is amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's the first time I've been on any chart in years, even though with all the great products I put out, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I always try and put out really good product. If I, you know, I got to do that, or it's this phone. Hold on a minute.
This phone that's all right. Rings.
Okay.
Nice.
Talking about we're in our New York apartment. We live in Florida mostly. So that phone never rings.
Nice. It's the landline. Who even has that these days?
Freaking landline. Yeah, I know. I don't know why we have a landline, but we have it. I think it comes with the internet.
I was going to say, talking about, you know, the American Led Zeppelin back in the day, Zeppelin's only out for a year. You guys are already getting notoriety. Talk a little bit about the differences between trying to become famous. Hold on. Yeah, take it. Maybe it's important.
It's not important. I don't even know who the number is. 516. It's a Long Island number. You know,
yeah.
We don't ever come here. You know.
It's one of those telemarketers.
Yeah, it's stupid. So. Yeah.
I was gonna say, talk about, you know, just trying to become famous and get notoriety back in the day. I mean, how different was it compared to now? I mean, just about marketing a record, for example. I mean, like.
Well, I mean, back then it wasn't a business yet. Back then, everybody made records. Everybody went on tour. Everybody knew each other. You know, sometimes we jammed each other. You know, it wasn't about money. Now it's about money. You know, you can't go on tour now. Unless you got money. Back in the old day, we used to go out and make a salary every week, you know, and we go out on tour. We come back after 4 weeks on tour, and we had a couple of thousand dollars or more, which back in 1970, that was a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
you know. But today, you know, you got to figure out like my Rod show. We just got a gig coming up in Jersey. My manager's on the phone. This is how much the airlines cost. This is how much you got to pay the band. This is how much for the van. Then you figure out how much you made. In the old days, we never did that. We should all go to an account. And then when I was done, I moved to California. I said, where's all the money? I said, you remember all those hotels you wrecked and those cars you wrecked and those first class flights and everything? That's where the money went.
Yeah. You know? And you never really see any of it in the end.
No, and I don't even remember seeing much in the royalty department for Cactus. I remember seeing one royalty for a vanilla fudge for like $80,000 back in the day, but I don't know where it went. I don't know if we got any more.
Yeah.
You know, we had manager took 25%, the lawyer took 5%, the agent took 10%. So that's what, 40% right off the top.
And the IRS.
And the IRS. Then we had to get hotels, and we used to fly. You know, in the old days, we did a tour of Vanilla Fudge and Jimi Hendrix and two other bands. And we used to drive our gear right up to the belly of the plane, right? Mm-hmm. They'd unload our gear and fly. And at the other end, a truck would come and pick the gear up right from the belly of the plane. That's how it was. You didn't have trucks to drive. You didn't have rental cars. You didn't have splinter vans. You know, you pay a guy $100 the sky cab, and he'd arrange that. You didn't have security. We used to go from the one time, you know, we late for the plane. We go, we get right into the gate, right into the plane door. They shut the door. We bang on the door, and they open the door, and we get on. No security. There's nothing, not like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's a whole different world.
No, totally. Talking about royalty. I mean,
we would leave a rental car at the top of the, you know, where you check in. You leave the car there, run in, check in, and run for the plane. And we leave the car there. And we call them, your car's on the upstairs in front of American Airlines, you know?
Yeah.
With the key on the floor under the mat.
Well, it was definitely a lot easier than today.
It's unbelievable.
Try to get a snare drum through TSA. They're like, what is this?
Oh, forget. Are you a drummer?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. I just spent Wednesday. I was in L.A. My son got married in Temecula, and I took a ride from Temecula to Hollywood, North Hollywood, my drum locker is, to empty it with this guy, Don Bennett, that has Don Bennett's vault to sell equipment. So anybody wants to buy my equipment, it's on Don Bennett vault. Two N's in Don. Anyway, so.
Well, hold on a second. Talking about that, look, Alex Van Halen is another notable drummer that just recently sold off his entire warehouse. Drum kits from back in the day. Everybody's doing this.
What are you going to do with it?
Mm.
I'd saved them. I'm 77 years old. I had boxes and boxes of press that I've done in my life. You know, I did Circus Magazine for 8 years. I wrote the thing called Drum Beat, right?
Mm-hmm.
I take new song, popular song, and I write out the drum part. I did that for 8 years, every issue, 12 times a year times eight. what is that? Whatever, the 88 issues. I had 88 of those. I saved every issue. 88 Circus Magazine. That's a big pile.
Yeah.
And everything else that I've done. You know, I had boxes full of that stuff. So what am I going to do with it now? So I threw it away. You know? I got some here. I'm in New York. I got stuff here in New York. I got stuff in Florida. You know, what are you going to do with it? So the drums I had, I got amazing drums. I had a Slingerland drum set. One of a kind is the last thing they built at the Slingerland factory. It's purple leopard painted on the wood. When you open the case, it still smells like paint. I never even used it. It's got four bass drums. It got 10, 12, 13, 16, 18, 20 toms, snare drum. And the whole thing is Radio King. You know what that is?
Radio King.
Mm-hmm. Radio King, a snare drum costs $2,000. I have the whole kit Radio King, four bass drums. So what am I going to do with it?
Yeah,
it's on the West Coast. I live in Florida. I don't play it. I sponsored D Drum. I got D Drum kit in Florida. I got one other Slingerland kit. If I need a kit, D Drum sends it to me. You know, I got one kit of D Drums in L.A., so I'll keep that. And I got a D Drum ES kit, the copy of my Ed Sullivan kit for Vanilla Fudge. I've got a beautiful Mapex Bird's Eye Maple Purple that I used to play with a jazz club in L.A. I got stands, I got DW pedals, I got so much stuff, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I even got some Anvil cases, you know?
Right.
So we went there with my roadie and we went through everything. I got cymbals up the yin-yang. I labeled everything, I signed everything, they put it in the truck, sending it up to Don in Seattle, and he'll set it. He's already sold a bunch of my stuff. He's got some classic stuff. He's got like a bongo, a kunga that Ludwig made for me. I'm the only one that had it. And I used it on Cactus. I used it in Vanilla Fudge. And there's some videos with it on there. What am I going to do with it? So I'm selling it. I got a 1924 Tom Tom, which is a pedal tom. You hit it, it's a floor tom. You hit the pedal, it goes like a timpani.
Wow.
I got that, 1924 one. I got 1940s snare drums. Thing I am keeping is a 1924 Ludwig Black Beauty 15-inch snare drum.
Oh, 15-inch, damn.
Those are worth some money, so I'll keep that, and I use it in my studio. I got a few snares that I kept. You know, 1969 Ludwig, you know, 2004 Radio King snare, stuff like that. But the stuff in L.A., I never use it, so I'm keeping enough for gigs. I do have some gigs in January there. And I'm going to reduce the whole locker to, you know, like a 10 by 10 at a storage place.
Right
now, it's huge. I even got my King Cobra state set in there where we used to put the amps in there and stuff.
Oh, wow.
I got giant pictures of me and Johnny Rod that were used in the King Cobra video in there.
So we're really
I'm just going to leave those there because what am I going
to
do with
it? So it just comes down to what am I going to do with it? Like keep taking
up
space.
What am I going to do with it?
It doesn't have sentimental value. You're like, you're okay with letting it go and going to another home.
The other thing that's good about it is drums were made to be played. They're not made to sit in a dark locker or a warehouse. You call it. I mean, I can call mine a warehouse. I always called it my drum locker. You know, but you know, knowing Alex, he might have a warehouse. You know, he's richer than I am. And he probably has a lot bigger drum sets than I had, you know, but, you know, I'm like, don't, I got rid of all my Anvil cases. I gave them back to Anvil and put that in the museum. I had Blue Murder Anvil cases in there. I was the first endorser for Calzone cases. I gave him my old Calzone cases. He replaced them with the same exact cases. And the old ones are sitting in their museum in LA, you know, so, I mean, what do I need all this stuff for? I gave a bunch of microphone stands to my partner, Fernando, who we did an album, a piece per domo project. It's an instrumental album that you probably never heard because nobody promoted it properly, you know, but they were great. So he lives in LA. I said, dude, I got a bunch of mic stands. You want them? Yeah, he came over and got them. I can't use them.
Right.
What am I going to do? Ship them to LA, Florida? By the time I ship them, I could buy new ones.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
You know?
And of course, as drummers, I mean, especially with the career you've had, you collect things for over the years. You probably don't even know you have it in the storage unit.
Oh, there's some things I didn't know I had, I found, you know, but I got, you know, I put in there some cymbals that were prototypes, you know, I signed them, but, you know, different companies too, you know?
Yeah. Mm. So where can people go and buy the stuff?
Don Bennett Vault.
With two N's.
.com.
Right. Awesome.
Yeah, that's all good. Yeah. But, you know, it's the bass drums I have in my studio, funny enough, 1971 Ludwig bass drums, 24 by 15. You know what that means.
Yeah.
They're unusual.
That's a very, that's a weird dimension.
Those are my Cactus bass drums. And the reason why they're that dimensions, I used to have 26 by 14s. And after playing those for a while, I realized the Slingerland, the Ludwig Speed Kings didn't hit in the middle.
Right. Yeah, because the center, it's too short. Yeah.
So I said, let me bring it to 24 and add an inch. And from that, Ludwig started 24 by 16s and added what they call power toms, right? Power toms were longer, you know, like a, instead of a 12 by 9, it'd be a 12 by 11,
mm-hmm.
13, you know, a 13 by 9.
That's true, because you did see a lot of deep toms, like rack toms.
Yeah, I did a lot of Pioneer stuff. I never used those size drums, mm-hmm. but my original drum with 26 bass drums, that a 12 by 15 marching drum in the middle, and you know, 16 by 18 and a 22 bass drum on its side, and a 6.5 inch deep snare drum. Those were the drums that started all these big drum fads that are still going.
Yeah.
You know, we used to pioneer stuff with Ludwig. You know, so I'm happy to say I pioneered a lot of things with them. Like they had the Octoplus set, it was one-sided. I said, well, let's put a skin on the bottom. Mm. So we did a skin on the bottom. That was my kit with Rod Stewart for a long time. It was on the front cover of my drum book, Realistic Rock, for many years, 20 years probably.
Yeah.
And that started an Octoplus, all these different toms with bottom heads, you know? All this stuff is still going on. You see all these drummers at all these toms, all these different sizes. It started with Ludwig.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's like you listen to those drums. I mean, they definitely have a different sound compared to, you know, with the toms with no heads on the bottom. I mean, like...
Yeah, yeah. It's just attack, mostly attack.
Mm-hmm. I find
the ones with the bottom is great. But, you know, I used everything. With Rod Stewart, I used the Octoplus kit with the one-headed, and then I went to the bottom head, and it sounded better. I even did the EA system, Randy May mics, that went inside the drums
mm-hmm.
with the double head. And I pioneered that stuff.
Yeah.
I had Syndromes, you know, which I was one of the first Syndrome guys. But it was great. Back in the day, you're pioneering stuff. You know, like we were the American Led Zeppelin. That was pioneering.
Yeah.
There was no other band like that back in the day.
What did you think of drums in the 80s? Did you find they were just a little too processed, or were you a fan of the cannonball snare drum?
I never did that. Where they put all that stuff in the bass drum, where it ends up sounding like this.
That's your
bass drum.
No body to it.
Here's your bass drum, here's your toms. Here's your snare drum. They all sounded the same. Shut up, you.
Your Apple Watch. Are you having a heart attack, sir? Why are you banging me?
Yeah, this thing is funny. It goes, the environment is too loud.
Yeah.
I said, shut up. I know it is.
Imagine going to a concert, your Apple Watch is going off.
I know. It did the other night. I was at my son's wedding. The Apple Watch is going off.
Yeah.
It was all disco music. It was pretty damn loud with all the subs. That's another thing. They put subs on the music today.
Yeah.
And you can't hear nothing.
No, it's all about the bass these days. You listen to any
record.
It's all
subs. It's ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
I when I record and I go to a gig, I went to a gig with Vanilla Fudge and doing the bass drum. I said, dude, take the subs off the bass drums. You can't hear nothing. It's all,
yeah,
you know, in the bottom, man. So he said, give me some mids. Mm-hmm. That's where all the bass drum punch is, you know?
Yeah, that's what you want. You want the attack. You want to hear the kick drum.
I don't want to hear this. Here's your bass drum.
Yeah.
That's your bass drum sound.
Well,
come on, dude.
Look, Cactus, Temple of Blues, available now wherever you get your music. You got fantastic guest performance on this with Joe Bonamassa, Billy Sheehan, Bumblefoot, Dee Snider. I mean, guys from Living Color, Vanilla Fudge are all on there. And a brand new record is available now, so go pick it up. One last question. A good friend of the show, Ted Nugent's also a guest on the record. I mean, like, was it a little, were you kind of apprehensive of getting him on as a guest? I mean, with his politics and everything?
Ted, I don't care about politics.
Yeah,
Ted
neither do I.
He's an amazing player. He's a great player. He's a big fan of McCarty, big fan of Cactus. Good friend of mine. I played with him.
Yeah.
You know, It's not about politics, you know? If you agree with him or you don't agree with him. You think he's a great player or not? He adds something to it. You know, when he did his track, everybody else played the riffs the way they were. He played the riff and then he changed it when the verse came in. At first I said, oh man, he didn't play the riff. And I listened to him and said, you know what? I like it. It's yeah. pretty cool. It's mm-hmm. different, you know? And his performance on the video, have you seen the video?
Yeah, I mean, it's Ted Nugent.
It's great. It's Ted Nugent. He's making the wild faces. And, you know, I wanted to do the same thing, but unfortunately, I had some problems. You know, I do the video. I do them in my studio.
Yeah.
And I had some computer things going on, so it kind of pissed me off. So I just let's get it done kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because I wanted to go like, you know.
Yeah, do the whole posing and everything.
You know, but I didn't do it because I was having trouble. But it came out pretty good.
Yeah.
And the last thing I did, I did the spin, the flipping the six in the beginning, which we did that on the end of the video. And I said, put that in there, you know? But I love Ted. Anything I do, he played on my guitars, his record, he played on this, you know? And he said, anything you want to do, let's do it.
Yeah.
You know? So I love Ted. It was easy to get him.
Yeah.
The hardest one was to get was Bonamassa because he's busy, even though I went on his podcast and as I was talking, he said, man, that Cactus song, Parchment Farm, blew my brains out. I said, well, you know what? We're doing a new version. I'd love for you to play on it. He says, I'm there. So he said, I'm there, but it took him a while to get on there, you know, because he's so damn busy. I mean, we had to move back our release of Parchment Farm by almost a month because he was releasing some stuff too. And they wanted to get in the way of each other.
Wow. Yeah, I kind of find that a little like, you know, I find that a little weird on his part because it's like you agree, and then it's almost like he delayed it. So it's like, man, if I delay it long enough, maybe they won't make me play on this, or you know.
No, that wasn't the idea because he played on it. He didn't know, and we didn't know when it was going to be finished.
Mm.
You know, and now the video too. So we released the single and not the video yet, but we figure we'll stagger it.
Yeah,
you know, the single will come out now. I think it's coming out or came out. And I guess that's how you do stuff today. You release a single video, then another single video, then another single video. And that's how you market it with videos. I mean, come on, when I was at Blue Murder, the video cost $150,000. You know, now I do my drums in my house. You get a green screen. I just did the single in my garage with a green screen, you know, for Cactus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it costs $600 or $1,000 to edit.
Yeah.
I did a video on my guitars this record. I got Tommy Thayer on it.
Nice.
And Tony Franklin, myself. And we did it all in separate areas. But when you look at it, you know, it looks great.
Yeah.
It looks great. But, you know, in the old days, of course, the first video after I started with Rod was me and Rick Derringer. It cost $32,000. You know, that was in 1982. And then I did videos all through the 80s. The last one was in the 80s was, I did two of them with Blue Murder. They were $150,000 each, you know?
It's ridiculous how things have just gone, I mean.
Oh, dizzily. I mean, to go in the studio, you know? I got my studio. Everybody's got their studio. Of course, you know, you can do records now for $30,000.
Yeah, if that.
You know? And less.
Mm-hmm.
I've done records for less than that. In the old days, you know, you needed a budget. My guitar's budget was $130,000 the first one, $200,000 for the second one, you know. But
yeah.
I used to pay guys that play on a $2,500, $3,000, you know.
Yeah.
But
and it's like, how are you going to recoup those costs these days if, you know, streaming's not paying unless you're selling, you know, 100,000 CDs? It's like.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
now you got the Spotify that's killing you. Apple Music's killing you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I refuse to listen to that stuff.
Yeah, you got to buy the... Listen, I always tell artists, and, you know, if they come on, I talk to the pop artists, for example, and they're like, you know, go stream my song, go this and that. I'm like, well, do you have the CD? Is it coming out? Do you have a CD, vinyl, cassette? Like, oh, no, it's just digital right now. Maybe we'll do some CDs. And I'm like, well, listen, I can't come to your show and get my Apple Music signed. You can sign my Spotify here. I want a physical copy.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to view it. You know?
Yeah.
And we just did three shows. We sold out all our vinyls and we sold out half of the CDs that we have. We're going to We got three more shows coming, so we'll probably sell them all. Yeah. It wasn't a lot. It was like 100 CDs and I guess 30 or 40.
But it adds up. 100 CDs is still 100 CDs.
Yeah, you know, and it, for me too. I mean, I don't, if I'm going to download something, like I'll pay for it on iTunes. Like it was, I found this chick, I forgot her name. She was a country artist that did country and metal together. It was really cool. Mm. So I went on iTunes and I bought it. Cost me $1.20.
Yep.
You know, but I bought it. I didn't listen to it on Spotify. I won't even belong to Spotify.
Yeah.
Some people say, yeah, listen to Spotify. So I don't do that.
No, absolutely. Well, you can go buy the CD and vinyl, cleorex.com. Cactus, Temple of Blues, available now for Get Your Music. All right, it's always great to chat with you. I'm running out of time, but and I'll let you go.
Bro. I'll see you soon, man.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Okay, bye-bye.
The Jeremy White Show.
Get exclusive interviews and bonus content on demand now. Visit youtube.com/Jeremy White Show.